Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. We are consistent, boys. Every week, right on time, we're bringing the Buccaneer fan base amazing information that you can't get anywhere else in the entire world.
It's true.
Agreed.
It's true.
Like, yeah, and
we're telling like world premiere stories right here.
These are things that some of these stories have never been shared in the history of the world. We are groundbreaking. And
I hear them for the first time myself.
I may be overhyping this completely. But anyway, I am Mark Cook along with Scott Reynolds and Trevor Sikkema, who we now call Beehive because his man bun has morphed into a beehive. It is a huge hairdo. He looks like Priscilla Presley circa 1967.
Or is it because I'm a Beyonce fan? Which one?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, with him being, not him, but Ken being in the news this week with with the man bun, I think that Trevor is looking for that alternative thing. It's like he kind of brought the man bun into prominence so much so that they have an action figure or a doll.
All I'm saying, check better be in the mail. That's all I'm saying.
They've got
to change. He's taking it to the next level. The man bun is now, like you said, the mini hive.
They've got to change the name
of
Ken to something more modern. Is that the most 70s name in the world?
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
Has anybody in the last 10 years been named Ken?
That's true. Hold on. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure you can Google that. No one since, I don't know, around 87 has been
just
given
Googled
the name
it.
Ken.
No one has been named Ken after 1970. 79. Wow, unbelievable.
Now, we're going to get messages from all the Ken listeners that we have, but right. I guarantee you none of them are under 20.
Well, I will say our good friend and PewterReport.com visitor, Kenrick Montgomery, is...
That's not really
Ken. Yeah, but he's Kendrick.
It's not Ken, Kenneth.
It's Kenrick, and he named his son. His son goes by the name Ken, who is a phenomenal college prospect. I mean, the kid plays cornerback.
Look, this guy is a Gator fan.
He's making Ken's proud.
We're giving him way too much airtime as a Gator fan. So, isn't he a Gators fan?
He is a Gators fan.
Yeah, he's a Gators fan. I'm pretty sure he gives me crap about the Noles all the time.
But. Dude, I'm hired full-time. Don't talk bad about me like that.
Well, full-time, on probation. Anyway.
Being a Gators fan?
Yeah, listen, but it was a lot of good action out there today at practice.
No.
No?
No, there was no practice today.
Well, the OTA was really good, though,
no,
right?
No OTA. They're done.
I thoroughly
done
enjoyed that mini camp practice today.
Well, we are live at One Buccaneer Place, but there was no practice today.
Yeah, it's
But one
it's
thing
kind of
we did
town.
See, Trevor captured some action footage
yes.
of the construction workers
yes.
which is
furiously and
news.
Feverishly building the new indoor practice facility.
Which we're probably going to get in trouble for, so go to Twitter now and look at it right now or you won't see it because they'll probably make us yank it down.
Well, at the same time, we do have some really good Bucs content because we've talked a lot about what we've seen out there on the days where we have filmed a podcast here, or taped a podcast, I guess, and done that right after the practice. But now let's recap and really kind of put a nice bow on this thing heading into July with some specific players that have stood out, and we'll kind of do a roundtable for this particular episode of the Pewter Nation podcast.
We're literally at a roundtable.
We are at a roundtable.
It is a roundtable.
That is an appropriate
term. A lot
term.
Of times people are just, you know, BSing you when they say it's a roundtable discussion,
a
like they
table.
Might be at a square
right.
or something else.
Or yeah.
You know, we just want you to know we're
100%
authentic.
Yeah, we're
here.
3.5 minutes into this damn podcast. I haven't heard any Bucs news yet.
Uncle Stan, I know you don't even buy green bananas anymore, but have some patience, please. Calm down. All right. So anyway, you just heard from Uncle Stan. This podcast, though, has a wonderful sponsor we need to talk about as well, don't we, Scott?
It does. International Diamond Center. Summer is the time for engagements and weddings. We all know that. It's also the time for birthdays and anniversaries. And if you're going to do any shopping for your beloved, do it at International Diamond Center. They got a tremendous selection of engagement rings, wedding bands, earrings, bracelets, necklaces, rings, you name it. Your loved one will absolutely love any type of gift from the International Diamond Center with two locations to serve you in Olmerton Road in Clearwater and also on North Dale Mabry, about 10 minutes north of the stadium in our Tampa location. You can also find them on the web at shopidc.com.
International Diamond Center brings back our most popular offer ever. 5 years, zero interest financing with no money down on any purchase.
This is incredible. Now through June 18th, get the unbeatable low price IDC is known for and spread your payments out over 5 whole years without paying a dime in interest.
How about a $6,000 Tacori, Viraggio, or Henry Dossi engagement ring? You pay only $100 a month.
Or get her a pair of 2-carat diamond stud earrings and pay just $115 a month. But you gotta hurry. This fabulous offer ends June 18th.
At International Diamond Center. Center.
And we appreciate our great sponsor, IDC, for sponsoring the Pewter Nation podcast. And we certainly appreciate all of our listeners as well. Now, before we get into our topics, I was thinking what we need to do for this show is something I did at 98.7 when I had my show on there. I had a show where we only talked in CB talk. So at some point, we're going to do an entire podcast where we're only going to talk in CB talk, where you have to literally go breaker, breaker, 1-9, over, come in, rubber ducky, things like that. What do you guys think?
Break 1-9 for radio check?
That's not bad, actually.
Do you even know what a CB is?
I've only heard of them.
Yeah, well, I don't think you can go to the local Radio Shack and pick them up anymore because I don't think there's any local Radio Shack.
Because Radio Shacks don't actually sell radios anymore?
Have you heard of the show BJ and the Bear?
No.
Okay. Greg Evigan.
Greg Evigan.
That's a fake name.
No, it's not.
And the Lander Sisters.
Weekly,
you remember them?
A weekly occurrence. You're just telling me fake names.
Let me just tell you something. In 1979-ish, the Lander Sisters.
Last time somebody was named Ken.
Yes.
Yes.
And Audrey, and I forgot the other one's name. They actually made me realize I was a male. I'll just leave it at that point. Yeah. You know those points in your life when you realize
they drove
18-wheelers.
I'm a male.
Yes.
The show was about an 18-wheeler.
Long-haul trucker guy.
Yeah. Okay.
With an adversarial... It was a spoof, a TV spoof in a sense of Smokey and the Bandit, because there was a sheriff, Sheriff Lobo, that was always after him, trying to bust him on things. And he had a monkey.
He had a chimpanzee in the cab called Bear.
Right.
It was a monkey, but his name was Bear. And and they used to have these hijinks out on the highway.
Hot chicks in bikinis.
Yes.
Yeah,
so it would just be him and a chimpanzee hanging out, just
getting
into trouble?
With hot chicks in the cab of his truck sometimes. So.
Cruising down the road, got a lot in my mind.
Again, there was
Who had more game, him or the chimpanzee?
Oh, my God.
Oh, he was a pretty good-looking guy, I got to admit. But do I? Anyway, I did. But Greg was the man, but, you know, between the Lander sisters, I think that was her name, or Daisy Duke from Dukes of Hazzard, again, around the same time frame, different nights, thank goodness. But that's when, as a prepubescent teen, you start realizing,
hey,
I'm a man.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
And you start taking longer and longer showers. Yeah. But anyway, enough of that. So we'll do CB talk at some point. I'm glad you know what a CB is, at least. I'm just kidding. We'll probably never do that. But I literally did that. An entire show. I hung up on people. If they didn't call, when they called in and said, yo, I want to talk about the Lightning, I just click, hang up.
Listen, this is a perfect segue because the first CB I'm going to talk about is Cameron Brate, who is my pick for the most impressive offensive player this offseason. What I saw from Cameron Brate is, you know, he was kind of the forgotten guy. Right after the draft at O.J. Howard, oh my gosh, Howard's going to be the starter and Cam Brate's going to kind of be the backup tight end.
Someone suggested, and I won't say who, but he might be on the trading block. Anyway, go ahead next.
Not me.
Not us.
That's fake news.
Yeah.
Not our block.
It's fake news.
Bigly.
I'll say this, though. Cam Brate was the guy that I think really stepped up to the occasion. And I just, every time you saw Jameis Winston throw the ball, whether it was directed at Brate initially or whether the play broke down, it seemed like every time Winston found 84, a catch was made. I didn't see those two have any type of miscommunications, any type of drop passes. Brate was making some fantastic catches. And, you know, for the Buccaneer fans out there that kind of questioned, and we were pumping, you know, the volume up and beating the drum about, hey, the Bucs are going to draft the tight end this year. We even had O.J. Howard as the number one overall pick for the Buccaneers in our third mock draft, I think coming right off of the Senior Bowl. Maybe it was the second mock draft.
No, yeah, it was right after the Senior Bowl.
And we didn't think he was going to be there, which is why he didn't make an appearance there. We also had David Njoku as the Buccaneers pick in the first round during one of the other mock drafts. But for the people out there that said, don't forget about Cam Brate, and I don't think this team needs a tight end. Well, we knew they were going to draft one because Dirk Koetter likes to use two tight end sets. But we've certainly seen O.J. Howard run with the second team all throughout the offseason. Cam Brate is going nowhere. He is going to be the starter, I believe, heading into the season. O.J. Howard will have a role, and there might be a time where his natural ability eclipses maybe Brate's, and maybe that happens later this year or next year. But I tell you right now, Cam Brate just completely opened my eyes to the fact that he is going to pick up where he left off last year.
Well, that's why they should have drafted Dalvin Cook, plain and simple. I mean, you're going to draft a tight end that's going to get seven touches max per game, or a guy that's going to touch the ball 25 times a game. I mean, whatever. But I'm
all right, so that's my offensive guy. Trevor, how about you? Who's the offensive Buccaneer that stood out to you during the OTAs and minicamp?
For me, it's Doug Martin. And I was on a fantasy football podcast earlier this week, and one of the big topics was Doug Martin because he has been one of the top RB1s in the years that he's been healthy. And so everybody wonders, like, hey, there's these reports out of camp that he looks great, that he looks like he was when he was those RB1 years. And let me tell you, I have not seen Doug Martin look this good in a long time. And there were plays, you know, Scott can attest to this, there were plays where we were sitting there watching it, and I'd watch a running back either get the ball or just somebody moving out of the backfield. Every time I would say Scott, I was like, who is that? Oh, it's 22.
Yeah.
Every single time. So he looks focused. He looks explosive. He looks like he has got all of the athletic ability that whatever he had when he was racking up all those yards is back. And so even for, you know, you fantasy football crazy people, I'd said Doug Martin's getting drafted way too late in a lot of these. So, you know, if you're a fantasy football guy, yes, he misses the first three games. But also I would trust Jaquizz Rodgers to get you some good numbers there for fantasy football people. But I just think that he has looked so good so far that going into training camp, I shouldn't see anything different. And even though we talked to Tim Spencer, the running backs coach, when we were doing the assistant coach day, and one of the things that we asked him is, Doug Martin's going to miss the first three games, so are you going to adjust the game plan? And he said, no. In training camp, the best running back is going to get the first team reps. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to be the most. We're not going to hand this to anybody just because Martin's out the first 3 weeks.
Right.
If Martin's better than you, he's getting all the snaps.
Yeah.
And that's up to you to outwork him to get some of those snaps.
True or false? Last year, the production on the field, when you saw Doug Martin run the ball, when you saw Jaquizz Rodgers run the ball,
mm-hmm.
it looked like the talent level between those two was pretty close, right?
Rodgers had a great year.
Right.
Rodgers had a great year.
But this offseason, and I'm not knocking Jaquizz Rodgers, I'm really kind of touting Doug Martin here, but it looks to me like there's a huge gap, right? I mean, Doug Martin stands out from these other running backs.
You don't. And we were guilty of this. I was guilty of this. You know, we were talking about how replaceable Doug Martin could have been because just the running back position is seeming to be cyclical and replaceable, but you don't get rid of a guy that talented. And he is showing us that unless there is another, like a clear-cut reason where he is hurting the team for some reason, if you can take a chance on him, wait for him to get better, you know, get him back in that starting lineup.
Yeah.
Maybe he becomes more focused than he's ever been. You do it because he is that talented, and he's showing us, again, that he is clear-cut the most talented running back on this roster.
Well, he better stay clean. He better take care of himself because
I heard he started showering more frequently.
He should. Doug's always smelled very nice, but baby powder. But there's a story we need to tell about Josh Freeman at some point and the baby powder, the talcum powder, the gold bond. Do you remember that story?
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint. Pink. Remember pink?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about that at some other point. But
First
of all, Trevor, let me start off by saying you're on a fantasy football podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to stop wasting your time because this fantasy football is never going to catch on. All right. It's a little fad that a couple nerds that plays Dungeons and Dragons have tried to translate into football. It's a waste of time. So I don't want you on any more fantasy football podcasts. Got it? No?
No.
Grandpa Cook, who is your pick for the most impressive offensive player
Ricky
this year
Bell.
In Tampa Bay?
Ricky Bell. No, not Ricky Bell. What is it? Most impressive?
Yeah.
It's DeSean Jackson. It's not even close, guys. I mean, this guy, Dirk and Munkin and Jameis and everybody's talked about, and the cornerbacks have talked about, you can see speed on film, but when you're going against it, it's a completely different animal. Jameis Winston didn't overthrow DeSean Jackson in any of these practices. He underthrew him at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible to overthrow a guy with that much speed.
Mm-hmm.
This team has been desperately lacking that. It was Jason Light's first priority when the season ended, when the staff got together. When they looked at it, they said, we are a slow football team. And really on both sides of the ball to a degree, they said that, but really on the offensive side, and they were. We talk about this all the time. You know, how's this offensive line going to improve and give Jameis Winston more time? Part of that reason is having a guy that runs a 4.3 40 out there getting open and getting out in the routes and getting the ball out of Jameis Winston's hand quicker is going to help Jameis Winston be protected a little bit more as well. But DeSean Jackson is just an elite talent. I hate to call him kind of a hired gun, but in a sense, that's what he is. But you know what? John Gruden did that when he got here, right?
Like a mercenary?
He brought in guys we're going to contribute Galloway. A couple years.
Joey Galloway was a guy who came to Tampa Bay, I think, at age 33, 32. Yeah,
right.
And still was.
And had a 1,000-yard season every year he was with the Buccaneers.
For 3 years. So, yeah. Except for his first year. He was injured. But as a starter.
Starter.
You know, from when he was healthy, he had three consecutive 1,000-yard seasons.
Now, if DeSean can do that, then the Buccaneers got a steal, and whatever they're paying him, the $11 million or $9 million, whatever
if
it
they
is,
can
is
get
well
that, then.
Because he's going to make everybody in this offense a lot better, no question about it.
Let's switch over to the defensive side now. The player that really stood out to me, and again, when you talk about defense, it's really tough to evaluate anything football-related. Mike Smith, we talked about this last week, said, hey, anything that happens out there, you got to take with a grain of salt because this is not real football. Really what it is, it's like flag football, essentially, because it's the passing game. You can't really judge the running game. The offense and defensive lines aren't banging heads. So the guy that really impressed me from a pass coverage standpoint was Quan Alexander. He said, he told me during the offseason, he really wanted to get better in his pass drops and his pass coverage and affect the passing game a lot more. He's always had a couple of interceptions per year. But when you go back and look at, you know, what like Levante David was able to do, what I believe in 2013, what Derek Brooks did in 2002, you know, five interceptions from the linebacker with a couple pick sixes thrown in there. Levante's had two in his career. He had his most recent one came last year at San Diego in a huge momentum-changing play in that game. Quan's first pick six happened against the Rams and unfortunately wasn't enough to help the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win that game.
That game is still the – I don't like Jude Ajayi-Barima because it cost this team a playoff – berth because of his terrible hold in the end zone against the Raiders. But in all honesty, Jude, I'm gonna put the season not going the way it wanted to that game. How do you lose to a horrible football team? Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just gonna say, I think Quan is really gonna make some strides. We saw him with numerous pass breakups, making plays in practice that he wasn't making last year, even in games. And I just think you're going to see a guy that is going to be a real threat to produce interceptions from the middle linebacker position. And I think that his instincts have been honed. I think his reaction skills have increased. And I really see a lot more pass breakups and more picks and throw in probably two pick sixes for Quan this year.
And then you're, calling shots with the pick sixes.
Can I just say I'm going to bury the hatchet with Jude right now on this podcast.
What?
I want to fight Jeff Fisher. Jeff Fisher, I will fight you. I will knock that mustache off your face. Go ahead, Trevor.
Well, he's free now, so. Touching really quick on your point about Quan, that's why you draft athletes, right? Because you want to, and for like Quan to go into the offseason and go, hey, I want to get better at dropping back. Mm-hmm. I want to get better in a pass coverage.
And catching 300 balls a day on the jugs machine.
Not everybody can do that.
Right.
Not all linebackers are fast enough, athletic enough, fluid enough to do that. So that's why, you know, in the NFL draft, when the combine happens and people go, oh, you're just looking at their numbers, you're just thinking about the athletes. Well, yeah, because this is important. Yeah. Because there are a lot of areas of people's games that you want to have the potential to improve. And if you're not the athlete to do it, you're not going to be able to do it, whether you have the will to do it or not. And so that's a cool thing about Quan Alexander.
Well, Mark, before I ask Trevor what his selection is for the top defensive player, do you think there's any chance it could be a Gator player? Do you think that could be in the realm of possibility?
You know, I'm thinking it's either going to be Hargraves or Javian Elliott, one of those two. But I'm probably going to lean more towards Elliott.
I'm actually picking Major Wright as... Oh, no, he's not on the team. Okay,
Brett
sorry.
Brett Culpepper's available.
So
Hargraves it is.
Yeah, my pick is Hargraves for the guy that I've been
surprise,
the most impressed
surprise.
About. And not just because he has phenomenal hair, which I am also a big fan of.
Oh, boy.
But you can just notice the difference between him in year two and year one just because of how vocal he is and how relaxed he is. And that's something that his teammates have also said about him at the secondary level, Mike Smith has mentioned that too. You know, Gerald McCoy, I think, has mentioned that to us as well about Hargraves. And just at Florida, Hargraves, he looked like this, you know, like how Jameis looks at the quarterback, just this big kid. That's how Hargraves looked at Florida when he was playing cornerback. He was wagging his finger whenever he was making pass breakups. Mm-hmm. He was dancing to the music when it was something that he liked. Year one, as a Buccaneer, I didn't see any of that.
Game a little bit. I hated that. He celebrated breaking up a pass.
Well, that was great.
Down 14 points.
But how did that game go?
They lost.
Oh, let's talk about the game at home.
How about the one where he was mic'd up?
The Seattle game.
You have to have confidence if you're a cornerback. Whether you're losing or whether you're winning, doesn't matter. You just got to believe that you're the baddest dude on the field. And that's what it takes to play corner.
He got that, I think, towards the second half of the season.
Right, and he got it a little more. And this year, he is just starting off right where he left off, if not, you know, even more himself. And you saw that. We've seen...
Well, think about some of the best cornerbacks in the game and the cockiness they have to play with, a Deion Sanders, a Richard Sherman, some of these guys that are some of the best that have ever played. Confidence is so crucial at that position, maybe more so than anyone. And being able to forget, you know.
Yeah, you've got to be able to forget the last play.
Think about being a cornerback logically. You have a guy who is normally 4 to 5 inches taller than you, mm-hmm. probably outweighs you by about 30, 40 pounds.
And he knows what route is coming.
He knows where the ball is going, and you don't. Yeah. Not only do you not, but you're probably covering an entire third of the field.
Yeah.
And corners are expected to do their job there. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's why when you look at rookie corners, and this is what I tried to say when I did my Hargraves review, just take, like, it's a learning. It's basically a redshirt year. Like, they're lucky he was able to get the playing time that he was, because it was able to accelerate how he did. So, anyways, he's looked great in practice. He's solidified that true outside cornerback spot. He's not playing nickel corner anymore, which he shouldn't have been.
Well, and he also got his fair share of interceptions, but he wasn't the only
player. In practice, you're saying. Yes.
But he wasn't the only player that got interception. You're going to talk about a guy who made a surprise interception near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I am. And I was, you know, I'm sitting there as we're talking about linebackers. One guy that really impressed me, and I'll go to my main guy in just a second, but I think Levante David is ready to bust out. He really got things together during the second half of that season last year, had some of those splash plays that we saw him have under Greg Schiano in Schiano's last year when he you know, had the sacks and things like that. And Levante, I watched a film review of the Buccaneers season. He really had a better year, I think, when you go back and look at it, than maybe we remember live at times. But I think Robert Ayers is a guy that's going to really have a tremendous season if he can stay healthy. Number one, we know he's got the attitude. He's got that edge that he plays with, that nastiness.
I love it. You know, every locker room needs a guy like that.
We talked to him at an event over at the stadium a couple weeks ago, and you know, he plays it off as, you know, just having a good time, but he hates to lose. He hates to be beaten. He hates to, you know, not win every play. And you got to love that from a guy that plays defensive line. Look, again, going back, looking at the history of defensive linemen, some of the best ones. We talk about cornerbacks being cocky. Some of the best ones are a little crazy, right, Scott? Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the they're nutty. Warren Sapp is nuttier than a fruitcake. Sorry if you're listening to this, Warren. I think you might admit to that. The best ones tend to have, you know, Leroy Selman's kind of the exception. A little bit of crazy. Yeah. The Lawrence Taylors of the world and Javon Kearse and some of these other, you know, great defensive ends. I think that or defensive linemen. I think that Robert Ayers, if he stays healthy, is going to be that 10 sack guy that this team's been looking for. And now he says that Noah's going to be a 15 sack guy.
That's a lot of sacks.
But
yeah,
that's a lot of sacks. But I'm going to say that I'm going to go out on this not a very big limb, because he's got the talent to do it. He had 9.5 his last year with the Giants. Last year, if he doesn't get injured, he probably gets close to 10 if doesn't eclipse that mark. So if he stays healthy this year, he's my guy.
Well, let's look at the free agent acquisition of the offseason for the Buccaneers. The guy that stood out to me, I'm going to go with a little bit of a contrarian approach here. I'm going to say Chris Baker, because we didn't see a lot of Chris Baker. He's the guy that stood out to me, and maybe not for the best reasons. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the guy that when the media had the opportunity to watch practice, I think he was out there for one OTA and then for the mandatory minicamp. Now, he may have shown up for some of the other days where the media was not allowed to view, but we're only going by six or seven instances we had to look at, and he wasn't there an awful lot. So I think it was also telling a little bit how Clint McDonald was the starting nose tackle a lot of the time in the mandatory minicamp. next to Gerald McCoy, because Clinton was here during the entire offseason.
And was here all of last year, and, yeah. and he's not coming from a 3-4 defense to a 4-3. And
right.
That's something that I know concerns you.
It does a little bit. I mean, listen, Chris Baker's going to be the starter. He got paid like that, and I think he's going to be a damn good player. His track record at Washington speaks for itself. I'm just a bit concerned about, is he behind it
yeah.
all, you know, with this? I think that training camp, he can catch up. He's a pro. But I would have just rather have seen him have more of a presence at one Buccaneer place, because there is a camaraderie thing, too. Gerald McCoy says it, and before him, Warren Sapp said it. You can't – when you have your pass rushers, they're like fingers. And, you know, fingers are better when they're tightly wound into a fist. You have to rush as a pass rushing unit as all four of those fingers clenched up into a fist together.
That's interesting.
And so when you have Chris Baker not here – I think that he's losing a little bit. Even guys like Jacquez Smith and Noah Spence, who were shelved this offseason because of their, you know, the fact they're coming off surgeries, they were still out there watching practice. Chris Baker just wasn't in the building enough for my liking.
Have you, and we'll get to Trevor's real quick, but I want to go back to what you're saying about Chris Baker. Something that concerns me, and I don't know if concern's the right word, I wonder how he and Gerald are going to gel. I mean, Gerald is a guy that's first in line for every single drill,
mm-hmm.
and Baker's not here. I mean,
yeah.
is that you can't come up really, I think, probably with two different personalities. I mean, they're kind of different guys, you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
Gerald's the lovable, happy, you know, and Chris is probably a little bit of the nastier kind of the Robert Ayers variety.
Yeah, that's a good observation. My only thing is just knowing Gerald, he is such a company man
right.
and such a general out there, that he is going to do whatever he can to make Chris Baker the best teammate and best defensive tackle possible.
Except 2 years ago when he didn't like Jameis Winston. Remember that? He hated Jameis Winston.
He was jealous
he
of
was
him,
jealous
right?
of all
yeah,
of the
yeah,
success.
Yeah.
I mean, all the camera time yeah. and stuff like that. Again,
no,
hashtag sarcasm, yeah. by the way. Go ahead, Trevor. Who's your guy?
Free agent picks, right?
Yeah.
Nick Folk. Nick Folk is my guy because...
He's a Folk hero to some.
He is. Folks, let me tell you about him. so the first time we got to see him kick in the OTAs that was open to the media, he just ripped his kicks through these small uprights.
Five
you know,
in a row.
The accuracy ones. I believe it was 4 that day. It was he was 4 for 4,
yep.
and Aguayo was 1 for 4.
That's right.
And we tweeted out, man... This kicking competition might not be a competition after mm-hmm. all. Now, here we are. A little time's passed. They're certainly kicking every day. They're kicking in practice, everything like that. And the very last mini camp that we saw capped off Aguayo going 7 for 7
mm-hmm.
and Folk going 6 for 7. Now, right. 6 for 7 ain't bad.
Boom. Take that, Nick
but
Folk.
But the thing is that
Knowles.
Aguayo went 7 for 7.
Yeah,
and
right.
Aguayo being here seems to be motivating Aguayo.
You mean Folk being here?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Mixing those names up. But yeah, it seems to be, I don't know, getting him more focused, motive. And maybe it was just the fact that Aguayo was basically given the job. I mean, if you're a second-round kicker, you're going to get the job. So
right.
it's not really like there's a reason to have another kicker on the roster. But I think having another kicker here, I don't know, maybe
well,
just...
He talked about that
to talk about, to talk with him.
That's exactly what he said, Aguayo told
me. It's helping a lot.
You know, even going back to his college days, high school days, I mean, there's always 3 or 4 guys, right? There's walk-ons that show up. And Roberto knew he was the guy at Florida State. But... You spend time with these guys, right? I mean, they're you know, you're hanging out at practice. You're watching each other kick. You're in the room watching film of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was, like you say, handed the job last year. And
with it, there's a competitive nature. Like when you see, even if it's a walk-on at Florida State, you see him go out and nail a 52-yard kick, you want to go out there and nail
right,
one of those.
Right. And the added pressure only is going to help Aguayo wherever he is next year, because Aguayo is going to find a job in the NFL. I think his struggles here in Tampa Bay, he will eventually get settled. Now, I don't know that's enough to keep him in Tampa Bay, because I believe if it's a 6 for 7 or a 7 for 7 during training during the preseason, they're going to go with the veteran guy, because this team is primed to try and make a playoff
run. If it's close, I think you're right. I think Folk gets the job because of the experience.
Right.
I don't know.
Now, I'll tell you what's going to go into this too is kickoffs. Aguayo, you know, whoever has it, that's good. If Aguayo just say it's 6 for 7 in preseason and Folk is 7 for 7, and you think you're going to give the nod to Folk, Aguayo could win that job if he's putting all of his through the back of the end zone on the kickoffs, too, because they're not going to keep two different guys for that. Some teams have done that, but the Buccaneers aren't going to do that.
No.
So, Mark, you doubled up. You mentioned DeSean Jackson earlier. That's also your free agent pick as well. So let's go to the rookie selection now. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt with I assume you're going to take Chris Godwin, Trevor.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Since you've
done only because he drew
studying on him.
Long straw.
I'm going to say Anthony Autlaire, and it's Anthony, Mark. Just I know you're.
Has he not melted yet?
Mark Anthony. I know.
Yeah, he has not melted yet. Okay. Yes. And
oh, he's still in the ice tub though. Okay, 7 days later, I checked. He's still in the ice tub.
Can we confirm that his house is or is not an igloo off Bayshore Boulevard?
I'll say this. I like the fact that this is a guy that is kind of a blend between Luke Stocker and Cam Brate. He is a better pass catcher than you might think, and the guy is also kind of a tenacious run blocker. We didn't see that in the OTAs, in the minicamp, but you go back and turn on some of that film at Laval when he was crushing
people. Is there any film from Laval? I haven't seen any of it.
It's on Huddle, yeah.
Okay.
I'm really excited about him. The team... you know, has him penciled in, I believe, as you know, as that fourth tight end. They're going to keep at least four tight ends. Maybe your son, Alan Cross.
He makes a team.
Will be the fifth tight end.
Auclair's a practice squad guy.
I don't know.
I don't trust the French. All right, let's face it.
He's a Canadian.
If it wasn't for us Americans, they would still be goose-stepping in Europe right now.
Actually, if it wasn't for the French, we wouldn't even be a country right now because they helped defeat the English by giving us supplies and reinforcements during the Revolutionary War.
We would have done it on
Would
our
they
own.
Give us croissants and beignets?
They actually give us the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, great. Some metal thing rusting in New York that nobody cares about. Go on.
Wow, unpatriotic. Okay.
I'm a Native American. I'm a Seminole. We don't care about you immigrants. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, now I was going to say,
that's
I think Auclair, I saw enough of him as a pass catcher. He does have a good set of hands.
Yeah, he does.
That I think he is going to be a guy that you're going to see in the third and fourth quarters of some of these preseason games really stand out and put on a show. I really believe that he is going to be for Fitzpatrick and for Ryan Griffin.
You're saying you don't think he's going to wave the white flag and say, it is too hot out here.
No. I think he's actually going to get conditioned to this heat.
I think he's going to wave the white flag.
I think that if he stays healthy, I think he's got a shot to make this 53-man roster.
He better, because I will fight him.
All right. Rod God.
Yeah, Rod God. Chris Godwin. He's clearly the most impactful rookie.
He put on a show.
And they're starting to really like him already. I said this kind of after the draft. I was really shocked that they did not pick Godwin in the second round.
Yeah.
I mean, they got him in the third, but I thought that was way lucky that he was still there.
We had him as a Bucs best bet in our draft preview.
But in the second round, right?
Not in the second round.
No. Was it?
Well, we do 1-3, though.
Yeah, I mean, through three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, man,
I was really shocked that they did not pick him in the second round, and we're seeing why at practice, why that maybe should have been the case or could have very well been the case because they already have him plenty involved. He's the outside receiver. He's not playing any slot, I'll say that. He's not doing any slot things, but he is playing that outside receiver role. He is like the Mike Evans role of the second team.
Yeah.
Like when they run their first passing play on the second team, mm-hmm. whether it's Ryan Griffin or Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, the first play is normally to Godwin, or at least they're looking his direction.
And what I think it's going to help is you're going to see Mike Evans maybe play 7 to 10 plays less, and the same with DeSean Jackson. And Chris is going to step in for those guys, maybe play 20 snaps a game, and I think do a lot to prolong the health of these guys throughout the year. It's a grueling season, and if you can spell Mike Evans, you know, 5% of the time and DeSean Jackson 5% of the time, I really think that you're going to get a better Mike Evans and a fresher DeSean Jackson at the end of the year.
You've got to have, you know, as you talk about defensive linemen rotating in and out in really a lot of positions other than offensive line and quarterback. I mean, everyone's at times on a rotation. But we saw Mike Evans last year in this heat in Tampa, even on the road at times where it's not so hot. First of all, Dirk Koetter doesn't run 5-yard little slant routes to Mike Evans, right? He's getting him down the field 20 yards and over and over and over. And we saw Mike tap out. That's something Mike wants to get better at, and Monken has said it as well. You know, his you know, being able to stay on the field a little bit more, because last year he was the guy. Yeah. I mean, when he came off the field.
I think he's a little leaner, too. I think he might have lost about 5 pounds. He's still a big guy.
Right.
But I think his body fat is
But Godwin's perfect for being that guy to come in, because when we saw Mike Tappa's helmet come out, we're like, they're going to run the ball here.
Right. They have they're going to run the ball. Every team knew it.
You don't know that's going to happen again this year. So I think that's a good reason that Chris Godwin is here.
He is a great substitute player, because you could have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Adam Humphries on the field at one time, and that's not like even though Deshaun Jackson's on the field, like if he's resting, you're not giving up the threat to pass at that point. You're not even giving up the deep threat at that point. Or you could have Jackson and Godwin and say like O.J. Howard in the slot or something, and like that's what we talk about when. I wanted to touch on this right when you said it. I'll be quick with this, but Derek Cutter, we've talked about, he likes the two tight end sets. He wants to run two. Derek Cutter just wants to win. He just wants to be as mismatched as he possibly can. In today's NFL, the best way to do that, tight ends. You get freak tall players who can either play on the line of scrimmage. They're either blocking or they're going out. They're doing whatever. Like that, tight end is such a mismatched position, but and this offense is too.
It's such about also disguising what you're going to do based on your personnel. And that's one thing I will say. I thought Dirk at times last year was predictable based on the personnel he had on the field. Now, part of that was because he was limited. He went through running backs like crazy, you know, and wide receivers. You're running Cecil Shorts out there and Freddie Martino. You're signing guys off the street and off the practice squad. So, I mean, he was limited in a way. This year, I don't think he's going to be – I mean, I don't think people are going to be able to sit up in the stands and say, okay, here comes a run play or here comes – but based on – who is on the field. He's going to be able to disguise the plays better.
If he's a good coach, we're going to know pretty quick in the next 1 to 2 years here.
Yeah.
Because he has everything you could ever want, especially
– listen to Trevor already question if he's a good coach.
No.
He's a good coach.
No, I'm just saying. You know, like we talked about that today.
Isolate that sound so I can send that directly to Dirk.
The NFL Network released their 32 power rankings of every head coach yesterday, and
Dirk was a little low there.
Cutter was number 22.
Yeah.
And I thought
I didn't read your story, but who are some of the surprises ahead of him that you thought were kind of crazy?
Guys that I thought
Jeff Fisher
that should have been Jeff Fisher is not on the list.
Knock that mustache off.
guys that I said that probably don't deserve as much to be in front of him is
don't say McAdoo.
Well, he's already behind him, I think. Oh, no.
Is he ahead?
Too ahead of him.
Wow.
He
should be off of it just on the base of the fact he has a mustache.
Jay Gruden, I thought he is one spot ahead of Cutter. I thought that he should have been behind him. Chuck Pagano is 15, and that's way too high.
Yeah, it is.
And John Fox is 12, and that's way too high.
John Fox.
Yes.
Listen.
They gave.
John Fox isn't going to get fired after this year.
If you made the Super Bowl or like have a couple of playoffs here and there, they kept your name in the top half of the NFL.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Or in coaches. And
have you done for me lately?
Yeah, it's no. That's one of the things that I point out in the article. So you guys should go read it and get mad about it.
Mark, I have to give you credit. No, you mentioned Robert Ayers earlier, a defensive lineman, where it's kind of hard to gauge defensive line, you know, play during underwear football. And you're going to go with Stevie T for your defensive rookie pick here.
Stevie Tuivalu-Wakamaka is my favorite
Tuivalu-Wakamaka
rookie. Yeah, that one
nailed it.
His brother. But no, I thought Stevie T. You know what I mean. I'm going back. It's hard to good catch there. You're learning.
Oh, man.
It's difficult at times to really gauge the defensive lineman because we're not doing one on ones. I can't wait to see the one on ones. Now, granted, we're not expecting Stevie T. to be whipping offensive linemen as far as getting to the simulated quarterback in training camp. By the way, that's our favorite drill. If you come out of the training camp, you got to watch the one-on-ones. And, Trevor, you'll see that. They're over here. We're away from the fans, kind of, unless you're in the VIP section. But you get really close-up action. It's really close.
Yeah, we are.
So, yeah, we are. But
it's like an Oklahoma
drill. I'm saying last year when you were just a regular person.
It's just like one-on-one pass rush. It's really intense.
With all the players around, the offensive linemen around, defensive linemen around, and they're cheering, and you see the fights, and the coaches are screaming, dropping the F-bombs.
Are you going to get in there? Is that where you're going to fight Jude?
I might. I might. They don't do defensive backs and reporters, but they might this year. But
yet?
But,
yet?
But what I expect,
it's a new Olympic category.
All right.
What I expect Stevie T to do is just not have that offensive lineman move him at all.
Yeah.
And boy, there was a time, not a time, there were several times last year where this team was just gashed up the middle. Mm-hmm. you've got Gerald occasionally freelancing a little bit, or maybe even under direction of Jay Hayes, where he's slanting here or he's, you know, stunning here. You need a guy in the middle that it's going to take a couple people to move out of the pile, or at the very least, run away from this guy, which again plugs holes, fills holes, and is going to help this team against the run because they can't give up these gouging. And I say gouging, there wasn't 40, 50 yard runs I'm talking about as much. I'm talking about
they were
going
third,
from second. You don't want second and threes.
They were the third worst team in the NFL on first and 10 runs.
Yeah.
The third worst team.
Yeah. Well, the one thing we did see with DBT was the power he has. Sure. Hitting the one-man sled. That's one thing that, as a comparable, you can look at. You know, Gerald is knocking that sled back. Will Golston is knocking that sled back. Stevie T was right up there with the seasoned NFL veterans in terms of his power. So last roundtable topic is the players that were on the sidelines, the players that were shelved due to injury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is that player that you kind of can't wait to see back in action in training camp? And there's a lot of guys, unfortunately for the Buccaneers, that were held out of the action. Justin Evans, second round pick. Actually, quite a few rookies were in this draft class. Jeremy McNichols, Kendall Beckwith, Noah Spence was a player that has been shelved due to the shoulder surgery. The player that I'm anxious to see, and I wrote about him in last week's SR's Fat Five, is Jacquees Smith, because he really put on a show.
Yeah.
Last year during training camp, he was healthy. He had a great preseason with 4 sacks.
Thought for sure you were going to say George Johnson, but go ahead.
No, George is another candidate, but I'm going to go with Jacquees Smith. I want to see what this guy can do. He's in a contract year this year, and when you have him on one side in kind of like their nickel jet package where they're putting their speed on the field, McCoy and Ayers inside, and Jacquees Smith on the left side, or the right side, and Noah Spence, you know, opposite of him, that's a lot of pass rushing ability. And I want to see, you know, how that knee holds up and if Jack has lost anything or if he's actually gained anything in the weight room by being able to maybe bulk up a bit. So that's my pick. Trevor?
Mine's Justin Evans, just because I want to see what they do with the safety position. And we were having a little conversation in the comment section or on the message boards, I can't remember, with the safety group. And during the mini camp, it was actually Keith Tandy who was playing strong safety and Chris Conte playing free safety. And that kind of sparked a debate. You know, we went back and forth on that with strengths and weaknesses with each of the guys. And I don't mind, looking at the depth chart that this team has, I don't mind Tandy and Conte being the starters, but I would have flipped them. Like, I would have had Tandy as the one who manages more of the space. And can anticipate and keep everything in front of him. I would have had Conte closer to the line of scrimmage. So that's just – and yes, we have talked about before that Mike Smith likes to keep his roles fluid with his safeties, but that's still where you start to line up. You can just see Tandy lines up a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage and Conte is farther back. So I just want to see where they're going to put Justin Evans, what they're going to do with him, if he's even really going to get major playing time at all this year, what his learning curve is going to be like, because he is an athlete like neither of those guys are in the backfield, and that's a big reason why they picked him again. They took a huge risk taking him in the second round and passing on Godwin, waiting for him to go to the third. So they were lucky in that regard, but there was a lot of risk involved with Justin Evans and seeing what he could possibly do. So he's my pick there. The guy who was sidelined, who's obviously also a rookie. Yeah. There are a couple other rookies that were there, but I just want to see what they do with him, because they talk about him almost being like an open canvas. You could train him to be a strong safety. He's trained him to be a free. Well, what are they going to do? I'm just very eager to see what the starting point of that painting of the canvas of Justin Evans as a Buccaneer is going to be.
Well, Mark, I'm going to hazard a guess that your logical choice would be Jude Ajayi-Barima, nickel corner, who was sidelined this offseason.
You know, he better show up. That's all I got to say, because if not, he's going to have to deal with
his
position coach.
Are you guys
me.
In the card for the Mayweather-McGregor fight?
We're in negotiations right now with Don King and the MGM Grand. I'm actually flying out to Vegas next
week. Can I get ringside seats?
No. No, okay. You can't.
You don't have that much pull.
Actually, for our fight, you can, but you have to get up and leave before Mayweather and McGregor fight.
Never mind. I'll just watch it on.
Yeah, because there's not going to be anybody there watching.
I'm not going to pay for that either.
But I'm going to say Noah Spence is my main guy that I really want to see. And what I want to see from Noah Spence is Number one, how they're going to utilize this guy, just as you were talking about Justin Evans, free or strong, and
he's,
you know,
lean too.
You know, what are they going to do? Is he going to be a stand-up edge rusher? Is he going to play that you know, position like they tried with Dakota Watson a few years ago?
How Vic Beasley was used in Atlanta,
Sure.
last year.
And Vic started you know, his career off not so great, and had a monster year last year.
It's
leading the NFL, I believe, with 16 and a half sacks, something like that.
I think it was 15, but
he was non-existent in the Super Bowl, and that's why the Falcons lost, other than the fact that they're also terrible.
Yeah, that's not why the Falcons lost.
No? But. Okay. But anyway, I think Noah, I want to see, number one, I want to see how they utilize him. I also want to see what he's going to do differently this year, what kind of counter moves he has, because last year he was primarily
a
speed rush guy. You know, what is he doing to improve himself as a pass rusher? Because he can't do a whole lot right now other than watch film.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to be quickly translate when he gets healthy,
mm-hmm.
and get on the field. He's going to have that 4 weeks or 6 weeks of training camp before the regular season starts to figure out what he's going to do, because he can't practice any of these things he's going to need to do to take that next step as a pass rusher.
Well, and if you remember, he won the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. I'm sorry, Defensive Rookie of the Month in November for his 2.5 sacks that month and a couple forced fumbles. And then in December, didn't come close to sacking the quarterback.
Right.
And the reason for that was because November made him a marked man. All of a sudden, they're keeping backs and tight ends in the chip on him. And facing double teams was something brand new for this guy. The good thing is he's got four game films to go back and look at and really kind of examine how he was being attacked and devise a plan with the help of Jay Hayes and Paul Spicer, the assistant defensive line coach, of how to take on those double teams. So I think that the next step in this process for Noah Spence is going to be, okay, here comes the notoriety and the attention, and you're going to get the attention not just from the media, but also from opposing offensive coordinators who are going to double-team you.
Good news for Bucs fans and for this organization is I don't know that there's a more driven guy to improve this year than Noah Spence.
Yeah, he's a man on a mission.
He's a man on a mission. He is, you know, we talk about
he was disappointed in 5.5 sacks.
Right.
He told me he wanted to be the defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah.
And he's good friends with Joey Bosa. They played at Ohio State together, very good friends. And he was ticked off that he didn't win that award, and you know, he blames his December for, you know, not putting up the numbers to get that award.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up for today's episode. We're going to be back next week. Now, I put a thing out on Twitter as we were getting ready to do this to submit questions, and we've got some. I promise next week we're going to spend some more time. We're probably going to spend a majority of the show. Maybe we're going to do our question session show next week.
Yeah.
And so, you know, go to Pewter Report on Twitter or go to the message boards. And if you go to Twitter, do hashtag Pewter Nation so we can find your question, and we'll answer those questions next week. But anyway, we're going to wrap it up for this week. We'll be back next week for another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I'm Mark Cook for Scott Reynolds and Trevor Sikkema, and we'll see you next week.